From WOUB News, you're listening to The Outlet, where campus meets community. I'm Caleb McCleskey. Each week on The Outlet, we bring you stories from Southeast Ohio. This week on The Outlet, Athens faces a budget crunch, and a local science cafe figures out new ways to educate Ohio University students and locals. These stories and more right here on The Outlet. The city of Athens faces a funding shortage and is looking for ways to better manage its purchases. The Outlet's Jack Green speaks with city representatives about solutions for this budget crunch.
So, Caleb, the city is facing a deficit in the city's general fund. This is because they've had to fulfill payroll and operating obligations that they've had to make coming into the new year. So we're still paying things off that came around November, October in last year. And now the city is starting to pay those off. But those bills are really racking up and are really taking a toll on the city's general fund to the point that there's had to be measures put in place by the city. And the auditor's office is warning that the council needs to rein in spending before things get worse and the city has to cut services to its residents.
So how did the city get here?
Like I mentioned before, Caleb, the city is now starting to pay some of its bills from 2023, which are like payroll and operating obligations. And the auditor is starting to say it is more and more likely that a similar situation will be required this year. City Auditor Kathy Heck says it is our duty to make sure that these funds will be available to fulfill any future commitments, whatever they may be. And that's where this general fund comes in, because the general fund is funded through income taxes, parking meters. When you pay the parking meter, that's where that money goes. It goes into the general fund. This money is kind of used for general expenses, hence the word general fund. It's kind of the money that the city has set aside. That's not already in a fund that's for one specific thing. Like there's the Parks and Recreation Fund. That all has to go to Parks and Rec. But the general fund, there's a little bit more room for spending. So like I mentioned, that money has to be can be used for payroll and operating obligations that the city has to pay. Now, these also help fund services. So on top of the services, along with these mounting costs, is really putting a toll on the city's general fund.
So what steps is the city taking to help save some of its money?
So, Caleb, the city passed an ordinance earlier in March, basically putting all hiring at a freeze. This means that the city is not hiring anyone, hence hiring freeze. So that on top of an email from Auditor Kathy Heck says that the policy for the general undesignated fund of the general fund, which this is, these are funds that don't necessarily have a specific obligation just yet. They're kind of just there in case something were to pop up. They usually like to keep that at 7.5% to 15% of the city's annual operating expenditures. And right now, the general fund is actually at 6%, which is below that 7.5%. Auditor Heck emphasizes that the fact that the city cannot continue to spend as they have in the past, saying that if the general fund is depleted, the city will have no other option to cut the services to the community. So now the city is really facing this tough decision of things that they want to fund but can't right now because of the way that the city's financial situation is looking.
And is there any clue when the city thinks it will be back above that 9%?
So as of right now, there's no clear answer for that. But Athens Mayor Steve Patterson does say that the city is coming up on a good time in the year for some finances. Like I mentioned, this fund is funded by income tax, tourism taxes, and parking fees, any of those kind of costs. And as we get closer to Ohio University's graduation, the Mayor Patterson says that the city could look and possibly be getting a little bit more money from People staying in the hotels. There is a tourism tax that the city gets a little bit of money from. People parking and paying parking meters. So there's a hope that this time of the year and going into summer when there are a lot of street festivals, also tax day just happened this week, so the city will be able to finally see how many people paid income tax and how that's looking. So there are a couple bright spots that are coming for the city that could really help get them out of this financial situation that they're in. But I've talked to some other council members who are like, yes, we might be coming up on a good time of the year for us, but as of right now, our financial situation is still in a tough spot. So they don't want to pass any spending until it's back at 9%.
Ohio University Science Cafe brings new discoveries closer to you. Outlet reporter Rosie Wong talks with the program's organizers who made this possible.
Today I'm here with Dr. Roxanne Millay-Bruni, Senior Director, Research Division, and Dr. Howard DeWald, Professor of Chemistry.
So the Science Cafe is sponsored by the Division of Research and by the Professional Research Honor Society, Sigma Xi. I currently serve as the Vice President of the Ohio University chapter of Sigma Xi, and as such, I then serve as the MC for the Science Cafe events when they're held.
Hi, Rosie. Good to be with you. I am the liaison with the Research Division, so I have the pleasure of talking with the speakers, getting the blurbs ready, which are the short descriptions of what they're going to do, and putting together the flyers and trying to do some PR for the event.
What would you say is one of the biggest breakthroughs of Science Cafe this semester?
Well, this year it's our 15th anniversary, and to date, we've had 180 cafes with over 8,000 attendees, and we've had over 12,000 people watch the videos online because we live stream everything. So I'd say our big success is just the fact that we're still here 15 years later.
And I think the fact that we have an audience that has lasted 15 years and continues to come out to Baker University Center, to the front room, to engage in science conversations in a friendly and open type of format.
So this conversation series is not just for scholars and students to interact. You also have people who are not in academia participating. You have the community in Athens and nearby areas. How does Science Cafe make knowledge more accessible, you know, as part of the mission of Science Cafe, such as turning scientific jargon into everyday language?
So if you go to a normal academic conference or a lecture, you know, you have somebody up at the front of the room and they're imparting knowledge, they're talking with the audience. That is not the Science Cafe. Imagine taking a world's expert and putting them on the stage and letting them begin to lead the conversation, but very quickly the audience chimes in and starts asking questions. And so it's a real conversation between this expert and the audience. And depending on who's attending that day, the conversation can go in vastly different directions. So the audience has a lot of power about where the discussion goes.
When the expert's talking in a lecture, it's usually to a group of people who have a good knowledge of what he or she's talking about. The cafe might be someone who is just, I happened to walk in and this sounded like an interesting topic, and they're gonna learn a whole lot in that short period of time.
And also the audience isn't just people from the university. It's K-12 students, it's community members, it's anybody. Anybody and everybody is invited. And we have our regulars who come to several cafes, and then we have our newbies who just drop by because that topic sounds interesting to them.
And sometimes we just capture a few people because they're in the front room, and we encourage them to stay.
That's
right.
And they do. And also, we give people coffee coupons. We love a caffeinated audience. So lots of enthusiasm, lots of questions.
You mentioned that this year marks the 15th anniversary of Science Cafe at OU. How did it all start 15 years ago?
So Sarah Wyatt, who is a faculty member in environmental plant biology, told me about Sigma Xi and the fact that they organized these cafes across the nation. And she wanted to know if Ohio University might be interested. So we wrote a grant, and we received money, and we started with our first series. And I can tell you that first cafe, boy, were we nervous about whether or not people would show up. But very quickly, we got a great audience and a lot of regulars and a lot of enthusiasm. So very humble beginnings to now.
And we have a store of all of them?
We do.
Electronic store, YouTube of every single cafe?
Yeah. If you go to ohio.edu/sciencecafe, you can look at all the archives. We have lists going back to the 15 years, and we have videos, I think, going back 12 years.
So throughout the years, what are some big changes you've noticed so far about Science Cafe?
Well, the biggest change was COVID. So we were doing in-person cafes, and then we had to move to, you know, an online format. And that was really sad because a lot of the interaction was lost. But at the same time, when we were slowly coming back to campus, we could then go and visit people's labs. And that was kind of an exciting thing to do. But now we're back in the front room. We're all caffeinated. We're all together. So I've actually loved being back in person. How about you, Howard?
Yeah, it has a certain dynamic of interaction and seeing people get energized and get that hand in the air to ask their question. And if they ask a question, we'll also throw them a T-shirt. So we have various ways of encouraging participation. And it's lots of fun. And, you know, sometimes that's the reason that they want a T-shirt to wear that says Sigma Xi and Science Cafe on it. So
yeah, there are a lot of walking billboards out there. Good advertisements.
The past two segments were done by our WOUB reporters. Paige Fisher, a reporter for The Post, Ohio University's independent student-run newspaper, recently reported on the Union Street construction project and how it's impacting local businesses.
So the construction actually starts at the intersection of State Route 56 and 682 and ends at the entrance of Oblenus Hospital. The construction is actually an infrastructure improvement project for the city, so the construction company, Shelley & Sands, is currently working on the pipes underneath the roads. So they not only have to take the roads up and then fix the piping underneath, but then they also have to repave the roads entirely. So right now there is no current timeline for when the project will be completed, unfortunately. At least that's what Councilmember Ellen Swank told me. That's really all I can tell you about the construction.
And then have local businesses seen internal changes from the construction?
Yes. So I've talked to the general manager of Larry's Doghouse, Dylan King, and he said that his business specifically is seeing a change in profits by a decrease of 40% compared to their usual growth of about 15%. They're also seeing a change in lunch rush times. So instead of being steady from about 11 to 1, it's also a random time. Like it'll be 10 in the morning, 2 p.m. It just depends on when the construction is allowing customers to get to their entrance, to their drive-through, and that sort of thing. They also are really struggling with keeping people employed because he's not able to give people hours if their lunch rush isn't at the time that he thinks it will be because he can't overstaff or understaff at a given time. Another business that's struggling is the Slice House owned by Avalanche Pizza, and its owner actually talked at a city council meeting about the struggles that he's facing as well, which is very similar to Larry's Doghouse.
And then are there any other concerns that the construction has caused for that street or even the city of Athens?
So there are actually some safety concerns that Alan Swank told me about with the one-way street by Larry's Doghouse. A lot of people aren't obeying the traffic signals and are just going down the wrong way on the one-way streets and not really obeying those traffic laws, and that's causing a lot of safety concerns for the city and a loss of business at Larry's Doghouse because people are going the wrong way on a one-way.
That was Paige Fisher from The Post. This segment is part of a collaboration between Ohio University's longest-running independent student-run newspaper and WOUB Public Media. The reporting was done by The Post, and the audio is brought to you by the production team at WOUB. To read Paige's full story, visit thepostathens.com. Southeast Ohio could see unusually cold weather to end the month of April. WOUB lead forecaster Emily Dietz say this weather might not go away anytime soon.
For sure, yeah, it's great to be back. Thank you so much. But yeah, I mean, as you know, this past week, it's been really nice outside. I've been a little distracted by the sunshine and the 70s, but coming up this weekend for Saturday and Sunday, things are going to be dropping down, especially since Thursday and into Friday, especially Friday, we're expecting those showers, and that's just really going to impact our weekend as far as cloud coverage and temperatures go. So Sunday's going to be our coldest day coming up this week with a high of 58, and we're going to see some cloudy skies. So at least we aren't going to see any rain this weekend, but again, if you have any sports coming up, it'll be a little bit on the chillier side compared to what we've had. And then starting off next week, we'll just be in the 60s and just kind of coasting there for the rest of this week as we go on. And I know it's also gardening season too. I mean, I always love a homegrown garden, vegetables, especially the cucumbers and tomatoes. I think have to be my two favorite ones. But yeah, because we're getting into gardening season too. And so if you're ever looking to get into gardening, you kind of want to check out your soil zone where you are throughout Ohio, because that's going to have a major impact on what kind of plants you can plant as far as flowers, as well as vegetables. And you also want to wait until after the last frost, which, taking a look at what's going on, we're going to see some 30s coming up this weekend as well. So maybe after this weekend you can spend time going to the store and getting your supplies. And then after that, it would probably be a good time to plant them in the ground this upcoming week, especially because Monday we're looking at sunny skies and 66. So it'll be a good time to get outside and plant a couple vegetables or some flowers.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I haven't gotten into gardening like that, and I don't know if I ever will, but a good tomato never hurt every once in a while. I know one of my family members does, like, peppers and stuff as well, so, like, when I'm able to get over to my relative's house, it's like, yeah, send me a few peppers back home with me.
For sure. Yeah, when we were kids, we used to have this whole vegetable garden on the side of our house, and it was really nice, and then the deer kept getting into it, so unfortunately we had to get rid of it. But yeah, it was so much fun because we've tried like cauliflower and stuff like that, and that just didn't do well. But it was always the green beans, the carrots, and the tomatoes. I remember we always had a whole lot of success with that. And we would always make cucumber salad, which is always kind of fun. Yeah, you take cucumbers. Yeah, it's like you slice cucumbers really thin. You put it with tomatoes, and I think it's either red or white onions. And like my dad always like put a plate like and a lot of salt in the cucumbers to like draw out all the water. Because cucumbers are a very watery vegetable, and so you kind of let that sit for a day. I can't remember the recipe, I'll have to find it, but that was always my favorite because it just always tastes better.
The Bobcats on the diamond are in the thick of their season. Sports director Aiden Crowley says the schedules for baseball and softball only get more difficult from here.
Yeah, Caleb, it's good to be back. This softball team for the Bobcats is really starting to hit their stride. As of late, they were on a 7-game win streak going into a really tough battle against Ohio State. They ended up dropping that one, but then they hit the road Tuesday, April 16th for a doubleheader with the Toledo Rockets that they ended up splitting, and Toledo is a top 3 team in the MAC. So this team right now, they started out a little sluggish in MAC play, but they've rattled off 8 wins in MAC play over their last 9. So really impressive stretch for Jenna Hall and her team. And when speaking to her after a series sweep against Northern Illinois earlier this month, she really just mentioned that nothing has changed with this team. It's just that they've continued to trust the process, trust the training, and they're finally starting to see the results pay off. She said that some balls are starting to drop their way that might not have earlier in the season. So they currently sit at 8-7 in the conference, 21-20 overall, but you kind of get the sense that this team is starting to really hit their stride, and it really comes down to the middle part of their order, kind of like it was last year with Yasmin Logan and Emma Hoffner. They combined for 50 RBIs on the season, so they continue to produce. Logan herself has 7 home runs, and Emma Hoffner herself has 3 as well, so 10 home runs, 50 RBIs from the middle part of that lineup as they continue to produce. And then Skip Miller, their ace, has been dominant all season. She's posting a 2.82 ERA, and she just continues to dominate out there. You feel like anytime she takes the circle that this softball team has a chance to win. So I really like where this team is at. Coach Hall has expressed that she really does like where this team is heading, and they'll be going into a tough home series against the Western Michigan Broncos, who currently sit second in the MAC with a 22-17 overall record. They're 11-5 in conference, so we can see if that process continues to pay off for Coach Hall and her squad.
Of course, so good luck to our softball team. But to move away from softball now, let's get right into baseball. What can you tell us about their schedule?
Yeah, Caleb, it's kind of been a struggle out there for Coach Craig Moore and his team. They're 6-12 in conference, 10-22 overall, and they've really slumped here to close out March and in April. So in their last 10 games, they are 2-8 in their last 10. They did pick up back-to-back wins in a road series against Eastern Michigan in conference. That was in Ypsilanti on Saturday and Sunday. You kind of hoped that it would carry into their Wednesday game, April 17th, at Dayton. They just couldn't get over the hump. They dropped that one 5-7 in that contest, and it was a late rally for the Bobcats. They were down 7-1. They scored 4 runs in the top of the 7th. You kind of felt like maybe this is their chance to get some win streaks and start stacking them up, but unfortunately, Dayton came in and closed the door. And for Coach Moore, he's really just harped on his team staying together and keeping a correct headspace during this drought. He really wants to see his guys continuing to pick each other up, continuing to cheer on their teammates and everything. And every team's going to go through a slump. That's just kind of how baseball is. But eventually, this team kind of has to try and figure it out. And it's really come down to their pitching. Their staff in total is averaging an ERA of nearly 6. So that's nearly 6 runs a game. And it's tough for this offense to produce right now that many runs in order to compete in these ball games. So Coach Moore and his staff kind of has to try and find a way to limit those runs. And because fielding-wise for this Bobcat team has been pretty solid all year. So that's really what it comes down to for this Bobcat team. But they'll try and turn it around on the road against a really, really good Bowling Green team. That series starts on Friday and obviously extends into the weekend. This Bowling Green team is undefeated in conference at 15-0. So not exactly the team you want to see when you're struggling right now. But hey, maybe if you pick up one win on the road in this weekend series, it can start to build some confidence for Coach Moore and his team.
Yeah, so best of luck to them. And then with the spring sports starting to get in that midway of their season, that means fall sports are not far behind. So, Aiden, what news do you have for us for our fall sports?
Yeah, Caleb, this Saturday, April 20th, the Ohio football team ends their spring practice with their annual spring scrimmage, where you really get to see what this team's going to look like next year. Obviously, they're not going 100% against their guys, but you got first-team offense versus first-team defense. You get to see kind of what this team's going to look like because there's a lot of question marks around this team, especially after the departure of defensive coordinator Spence Nowitzki. He ended up taking a job at Memphis, so he is out of the building. The Bobcats have yet to announce who his replacement's going to be. Obviously, we're just a couple of days away from the spring scrimmage and a lot of important days here for this Ohio football team. So in my opinion, it makes the most sense to look in-house for this team. And John Hauser is someone who's been with the program, with Spence Nowitzki for these past 2 years, spent time with Nowitzki at Miami. He seems like a very natural look for this Bobcat team. But with Nowitzki's departure, a big transfer for them leaving with Nowitzki is defensive tackle Rayon Buell, who was all MAC last year as a defensive tackle. He was an anchor along with Rodney Matthews on the interior defensive line for this Bobcat team. So a huge loss for them late in the spring into this cycle of transfer portal that we now live in with college athletics. And adding insult to injury, wide receiver Jacoby Jones, the redshirt senior who was a big part of the production 2 years ago, had a season-ending injury last year to his knee, ended up transferring out as well. So that wide receiver room that was already pretty thin gets even thinner for this Bobcat team. But on the other end, some of the bright spots for this Ohio football team going into the season has to be Ricky Hunt. I mean, you think about how he ended last year in that spring game, 5 touchdowns in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. He exploded out of nowhere after a couple running backs transferred out. He finally got his opportunity, and the running back from Oklahoma absolutely took advantage of it. So he's going to be someone absolutely to watch going into this year. And then Shea Taylor is going to take over as that kind of play caller on defense. He's someone who's just from up the road at Sheridan, obviously a storied football program in Southeast Ohio. So He's someone to look out for. And then an interesting story, I feel like it always is for every football team around this time of year, is the quarterback battle. Who's going to be that starter? It's going to be between CJ Harris and Park Navarro is probably where it's at right now. Two people who have been proven, two bowl winners. CJ Harris picked up the Arizona Bowl victory 2 years ago. Parker Navarro picked up the Myrtle Beach Bowl victory. So some decisions for head coach Tim Albin going into this year, but a lot of question marks, and maybe some of them get answered on Saturday, but obviously a lot of work to be done for this Ohio football team.
That's all we have for you this week. Thanks for joining us. The Outlet is produced each week by me, Caleb McCleskey. We're edited by Teach Baidia, Aaron Payne, and David Forster. Adam Richards, our technical assistant, and our theme music is performed by Ryan Gabos. Enjoy our show? Tell a friend to give us a listen. They can subscribe to The Outlet on SoundCloud or Spotify, as well as Apple Podcasts, or find us online at woub.org. They can also follow us on Twitter at @outlet_woub and Instagram at @newswatch_woub. We'll be back next week with more stories from Southeast Ohio.